Saunders versus Commonwealth, Ms. Ashby and Mr. Campbell. Ms. Ashby, do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
4 minutes, please.
Pardon?
4 minutes, please.
Okay. You may begin when you're ready.
May it please the court, my name is Sharon Ashby. I'm here representing Jamal Kimo Saunders, the appellant.
Could you speak up just a little bit? That microphone doesn't work. We have no.
Oh, it doesn't. Okay.
We have no amplification. I'm sorry.
May it please the court, I'm representing Jamal Kimo Saunders in the conviction for possession of a firearm by a person who has been adjudicated delinquent of a violent felony as a juvenile. Essentially, we are here asking that this court reverse his conviction. There are a couple of different reasons. The one that stands out in my mind most is that the trial court used the wrong standard. He used an inapplicable definition in this particular case. There was certainly evidence in the record to indicate that he seemed to have some uncertainty as to what the applicable definition was. He even asked questions of both counsel and eventually ended up looking toward the model jury instructions. However, he recited a definition from 18.2308.4. Because of the added element in that statute and also in 18.253.1, there is an added element of fear or apprehension of physical harm by the victim. Case law has stated that because of this, it's fine to have a more broad definition, including something that can be just appear to be a firearm. But with 18.2308.2, there is no element for fear
apprehension. Does your assignment of error encompass your argument that the trial judge employed the wrong legal standard? It seems to be a pure sufficiency assignment.
I believe it is actually encompassed in the argument. It certainly was in my brief. But it's kind of a two-pronged defense, if you will. There was partially that the judge used the wrong statute, the wrong definition, but also the evidence that was presented at trial would not be sufficient under the applicable statute because of the different evidence that was available. We had testimony of the victim of what he saw, obviously. We had testimony of what he heard. He affirmed that he did not hear a bang as you would normally find from a rifle being shot. He heard more of a sound.
Yeah. Counsel, isn't that all factual, though, and isn't it within the parameters of the trial court to make that determination as trier of fact, whether a pushed or a bang would represent a firearm?
It is factual, and my understanding is that it's certainly binding unless it's plainly wrong or contrary to, or I guess without evidence to support it. We're stating that it's without evidence to support it in this particular case. Additionally,
how do you deal though with the fact that Mr. Roberts identified it as a 22, and he's like, you know, I know guns, I know what a 22 looks like.
There are certainly rifles and pellet guns, BB guns, that all appear to look the same as your, I guess, 22 caliber type of guns. My assertion is that just what he saw plus everything else was not sufficient for the court to find that this was an instrument that expels projectiles by means of explosion.
Well, let me stop you there because I've kind of pondered on this issue. Your whole argument seems to be that a weapon that's designed, made, and intended to expel a projectile by means of sudden expansion of compressed CO2 is not a firearm. Is that fair?
Is that pneumatic pressure?
Yes. Oh,
yes. Then that is, yes, that's what we are saying.
The definition uses the word explosion. Explosion can be something that occurs as a result of combustion, the burning of gunpowder, but it can also be something that happens because of an expansion of compressed air. We talk about a balloon exploding or a boiler exploding. Why can't we conclude that the General Assembly or the Supreme Court, I guess, in coming up with that definition, intended to include any weapon that expelled a projectile by the means of sudden expansion of gas?
Because the case law, both the case law for the Court of Appeals and the Virginia Supreme Court have both made some statements regarding that pneumatic.
We've excluded spring guns, but I'm not sure we've ever excluded a gun that can fire a projectile of the same caliber as a 22 rifle because of compressed air as opposed to the expansion of gas resulting from an explosion of gunpowder.
There was the Jones case from the Court of Appeals, I believe it was from 1993, where it was under a different statute. It was under use of a firearm while committing a felony, but it was a BB gun that the defendant had in his possession at that time, and I believe the Court of Appeals held that this was something that an instrument that expelled projectiles by means of pneumatic pressure as opposed to by means of explosion. That's essentially where our premise comes from.
All right.
Additionally, what I was saying about the statutes is that 18.2308.2 does not have the added element of fear that is there. The legislature was seeking merely to prescribe the possession of firearms by someone who has been convicted of a felony. Because of this, case law is quite clear that there needs to be a more specific definition, meaning an instrument that is made, designed, or intended to expel projectiles by means of explosion. That is very clearly not the case here, based on all of the evidence that the trial court had before it. The evidence of what Mr. Roberts heard, what he felt, or actually in this case that he did not feel anything when he was struck, that he did not seek any sort of medical attention for several days, and clearly he did not feel his wound was certainly severe enough to seek medical attention before that time, and I believe in
the eventually had to, right?
Actually, I was going through the transcript of the appendix yesterday, and I saw something that was quite interesting. When he was asked by the Commonwealth attorney, "Did you go to the hospital on July 8th?" he said, "Yeah, they made me." To me, that would indicate that he was not feeling that he needed to seek medical attention. Someone else was indicating he needed to seek medical attention.
His girlfriend was tired of him bleeding all over the house. With his homemade, whatever he did to patch up his wound.
If the court actually looks at the photographs of the wound, it was a fairly small scratch on his stomach. That is another reason why we believe that the evidence points more toward a pneumatic type pressure as opposed to an explosion.
Well, counsel, let me move you on to your other argument about the trial judge applying the incorrect law.
Yes.
He did ramble on a bit about different model jury instructions and the like. But at the very end of the whole discussion, the prosecutor says, "Quite candidly, Judge, I would respectfully submit we have evidence that it produced a projectile and is a firearm because he identified it as a .22," at which point the judge says, "Yeah." Mm-hmm. Doesn't that end your argument?
Actually, no. We have the projectile. There's no contesting that. There was something that hit Mr. Roberts. Obviously, it was not extracted at that point because he still had surgery planned. But that there was a projectile is not the end of the inquiry. The court should have gone further to determine if the projectile was actually expelled by means of explosion.
But the second part of the prosecutor's point was that it was a firearm because he identified it as a .22.
But whether it is actually a firearm is dictated on if it can satisfy the definition that the courts have posited, basically. Then the definition is an instrument designed, intended, made to expel projectiles by means of explosion. We do not have any evidence of an explosion in this particular case. We have more evidence that would indicate...
Your argument is you got a projectile that came out of something that looks like a gun, but you argue no proof of an explosion.
Yes. Just based on the evidence, the wound itself, the sound that it made.
And it's not a reasonable inference that if you have a projectile and it comes out of a .22 rifle that it was by means of an explosion?
I don't believe that the evidence would indicate it did come out of a .22 rifle. I mean, that is what Mr. Roberts said he saw.
Let's assume that the trial judge accepted that and we're bound by that.
By what Mr. Roberts saw?
No, by the trial court concluding that it was a .22 rifle.
Okay.
So it was a .22 rifle, and we know that there was a projectile. Isn't that enough to show that there was an explosion that created that projectile going into the victim?
Well, again, you have the other evidence that contradicts the, I guess, the inference that there was an actual .22 rifle involved. The sound, the wound itself, I believe defense counsel at trial stated that if it had been an actual .22 caliber bullet, this would have been a much more severe wound. This would have been something where he was not...
But that was argument. There was no evidence of that.
There was actually
there was no expert testimony. There was no evidence presented by the defense that would support the argument of counsel.
Actually, there was no evidence presented by the Commonwealth that would support their own premise. But again, we didn't have any testimony of medical personnel, experts who could testify to the type of wound someone would feel if hit by a bullet as opposed to hit by a pellet.
It penetrated his body.
Yes, sir.
I mean, that's.
And the photos, as the trial court indicated in the record, the photos. Impressed the trial court in terms of showing that there was the wound.
There's no contesting that there was a wound. It's just that the trial court did not prove, I guess, from what instrument the wound sprang, I guess, is the best way to put it. Additionally, I would like to,
it's okay.
I would like to address the Attorney General's argument regarding Jordan and Bread. There was some statement in the Attorney General's reply brief that Jordan and Bread would be controlling, but I believe that the facts in Mr. Saunders' case are actually less compelling than they are in Jordan because of the additional evidence that we have here. In both Jordan and Red, you had merely what the victim saw. That is the only testimony that was available. That was the only evidence that was presented to each trial court. Certainly, I could see where a court of appeals would feel boxed in to have to believe that this must have been an instrument that expels projectiles by means of explosion. But in this case, we have the actual firing of the weapon, the wound itself, the noise that it made when it was fired, and all of this evidence would point conclusively to an instrument that expels, I guess, projectiles by means of pneumatic pressure as opposed to
explosion. So your point is with Jordan and Red, with less evidence, the Commonwealth had the ability to get the case affirmed. But here, with more evidence,
it's not that there's more or less. It's that there is contradictory evidence in Mr. Saunders' case. The evidence to contradict the, I guess, premise of the Commonwealth that this was an actual firearm is the wound itself, the sound that Mr. Roberts heard when
but
the...
Why do you presume that this sound means that it wasn't expelled by explosion of gunpowder? I mean, the misfires, there's .22 caliber short ammunition, which is very low velocity ammunition. There could be a variety of reasons why it didn't sound like a howitzer.
I think it's more a common knowledge sort of thing that an actual firearm is going to make a loud noise. It's a fairly distinct noise. Anyone who has heard a firearm being shot would be able to attest to that. But to, I guess, assume that it was simply a misfire or a low caliber,
it's a low caliber 22.
Or something to that effect, I think would actually be more in the area of speculation, just to assume that there was a misfire, even if there's no indication of that.
You're saying that the court was bound to draw the conclusion because of psst rather than bang, that it wasn't an actual firearm.
In addition to the wound.
Well, I don't understand that because it clearly penetrated his body.
Basically, the argument was that with an actual .22 caliber bullet, I suppose, if someone is shot by that, that is something that you are going to feel. This is something
you're
not
welcome.
Counsel,
where is evidence in the record of that?
There's not evidence in the record, but this is something where the court can exercise common sense.
But the court didn't. The trial court exercised common sense in the other direction and made a conclusion that unless is plainly wrong or without evidence to support it, we're bound by.
Yes, and we're asserting that it is plainly wrong or without evidence to support it.
Ms. Ashby, you're into your rebuttal. I'm sorry I neglected to mention that. I'll give you the rebuttal you requested, but you may continue if you wish or reserve.
Does anyone else have further questions at the time? Okay. I will just reserve my rebuttal.
Good morning again. May it please the court, Aaron Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. I think this case really is controlled by Jordan and Red. Jordan has sort of been a game changer in these type of cases. In Jordan, the victim testified that they saw a Raven pistol, and the defendant implicitly threatened to shoot the victim, and that was enough to find that there was possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. In this case, we have a very similar set of circumstances where the victim says he knows all guns, and he identified the firearm as a .22 rifle, and we have the defendant threatening to shoot the victim in the face, and then we actually have the defendant actually shooting the victim.
How do you respond to Ms. Ashby's argument that if it had been a .22, it would have done a lot more damage? Unless his alias is Clark Kent, .22 bullets just don't bounce off of people or do a small, here it didn't bounce off, but a small wound that it would have sent him to the hospital or worse.
I mean, I don't know if there's anything in the record that what a .22 would have done to someone. I mean, it's a low caliber firearm. He didn't feel it at all, which is unusual. And if you're shot with an air gun, you would probably feel that too. So I don't know where that gets us, because...
Let's move on to the confusion of the trial court. Address that for us as to why we should conclude that the trial judge understood the law.
Well, Your Honor, you've already talked about it, but if you look on appendix page 115 and 116 is where the trial court is talking about these jury instructions and just sort of asking questions on the definition of a firearm. And the Commonwealth responds that, well, I'd have to look at that, but quite candidly, Judge, I would respectfully submit we have evidence that the produced projectile on this firearm, because he identified it as a .22. And the trial court says, yeah. And then they go on, and then the trial court makes its ruling on the next page, and he doesn't ever make any explicit ruling that I think that this is a air gun or a pellet gun, and therefore I'm still going to convict under this.
Counsel, is there any argument that was made today by appellant's counsel that was not argued to the trial court in terms of the gun and whether it was a gun and whether it was a pneumatic gun?
No, they argued that it was a a pneumatic gun to the trial court, and it was rejected. So that hypothesis of innocence has been rejected by the trial court.
Mr. Campbell, you cited Jordan, and I want to help me with this, how we're going to get here. Jordan, the witness, described the gun as a Raven.
Yeah.
A Raven semi-automatic, I think he said.
Yeah.
Now, the Supreme Court kind of expanded that testimony because the Supreme Court said he identified the object as a Raven. And then the Supreme Court, not the evidence at trial, went on to say a Raven is a well-known compact 25 caliber semi-automatic pistol that is commonly referred to as a Saturday Night Special and can easily be concealed, citing a Fifth Circuit case for that factual definition of a Raven. And then the Supreme Court goes on to say the reference to, quote, Raven indicates a specific weapon that was designed, made, and intended to fire or expel a projectile by means of an explosion. Therefore, a Raven clearly meets the definition of a firearm set on Armstrong. Can we walk that plank in this case with the mere reference to a .22?
Yes, because the Supreme Court affirmed this court's holding in Red. And in Red, if you remember, the firearm was a long black gun, with not even a specific type of caliber, just a long black gun, and that the defendant had threatened to kill the cashier, I believe is what it was.
But that's the difference with Red. There was a threat to kill, and I think the Supreme Court said that threat to kill allowed you to draw the inference that this was an actual firearm.
Yeah, but then also in Jordan, there wasn't an explicit threat.
And in this case, he said, I'm going to shoot you in the face.
And I'm going to shoot you in the face, which I believe is a threat to kill, or severely.
When I was a kid, I had a .22 caliber pellet gun operated by pneumatic pressure. I assume they still exist today. So the mere description of a .22 caliber doesn't have anything to do with the means by which the explosion occurs. It's simply a definition of the caliber of the projectile that came out the end of the barrel.
I mean, in any of these cases, there can be pellet guns that look like firearms.
It could be a pellet gun that is of a .22 caliber, I think.
I mean, there could be one that looks like a Raven.
Yeah.
I mean, there probably could be.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll adopt that language.
I think the best that they have here is this noise. But we have to look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth. The credibility of the witness, of what that sounded like, is really...
Well, you have to concede, do you not, that if this had been a .22 caliber rifle with real ammunition, that it wouldn't take a leap of faith to assume that the wound would have been a little more severe?
I just don't know how severe a wound from a .22 would be. I mean, a .22 is a pretty low caliber firearm, and they're not very loud. The one thing I...
What was the distance between the defendant and the victim?
I don't think it's
indicate?
In the record.
From the porch to the sidewalk,
to the porch to the sidewalk. I mean, I don't know how far...
The porch was from the sidewalk.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know how far that is.
Another one.
You know, perhaps that sound or the wound would carry a little more weight if he had identified it as something larger, like a shotgun or something. I'm not the most well-versed expert on firearms.
It's probably a good thing, because then you can stick to the record.
So, yeah. So, I mean, what we have is the record. And I won't belabor the point, but, I mean, this is a factual case, and I would ask that the court not substitute its own judgment for that of the fact finder. If there are no other questions, I ask that you affirm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ashby, you have about 3 minutes of rebuttal.
Yes. I just wanted to address the Attorney General's argument on a couple of different points. Yes, there was a threat to shoot Mr. Roberts in the face, but a threat to shoot is not necessarily a threat to kill. Someone can be shot with a BB gun. They can be shot with a water pistol. They can even be shot with a Nerf gun. That's not conclusive of what sort of instrument is being used. That the trial court made
counsel,
some...
Counsel, what about the evidence from the second day that relates to what the victim's mother heard about the defendant wanting to kill?
My belief is that the evidence from the second day is entirely irrelevant to the actual issue that we are addressing at the moment, because it's not as though...
Well, it was all evidence at trial, and although the judge did not convict of any of the second day's worth of offenses, it's clear in the record that he believed the victim's testimony. He just didn't believe that there was enough for those offenses. So it's still evidence in the record.
Yes. But I think trying to put that into the context of what happened the day before is something like trying to get in the Wayback Machine and go back in time. Trying to give someone the benefit of hindsight, I don't think that would be appropriate for, I guess, what we're here for today. Additionally, that the trial court did say yeah when the prosecutor was talking about we have a projectile and it's 22 caliber, so clearly it's a firearm. Yeah is not universally limited to being, I agree with you. It means, I understand what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. It could even mean, I'm paying attention. That's not conclusive.
Before that, though, before Mr. Newman made some other comments, the court had said, and I mean, here we have evidence that it produced a projectile. And then Mr. Newman made the other comments that you referred to, and that's when the court said, yeah.
But we've never been contesting that there was a projectile. The point that we are contesting is that there was no evidence to show that the projectile was expelled by means of explosion. That's the part where, I guess, the misstep happened, if you will. Additionally, in Red, they did have the actual threat, I will kill you. I know in Jordan there was not an actual threat, but I believe the pointing of the gun about 6 or so inches away from the victim's face was certainly a fairly good indication of what that could potentially mean.
Even if yeah doesn't mean any more than just, yeah, I'm following what you're saying, but I don't necessarily agree with it or disagree with it. If the trial court ruled, if Judge Mollum ruled the way he did, we have a lot of case law that says the trial court is presumed to know the law and to follow it absent indication otherwise. Does he really have to say, yes, I think this was a 22 rifle that expelled a projectile by means of explosion? Does he actually have to say that, or is that something we infer from his ruling?
He does not have to say that, but I believe that this is one of those occasions where there is actual evidence to the contrary, that he believed there was an explosion, because he recited an incorrect definition, a definition that by all accounts includes the ability to talk about something
that
appears to be a firearm.
Firearms offenses in front of the court at the time.
Yes.
So, I mean, the fact that he was musing about different, I mean, they were discussing different definitions. There were several firearms offenses in front of the court at the time, because you had all of the events from July 4th, you had all the events from July 5th, and they were, you know, they were at a point in time where they were discussing everything that was on the table.
I believe that...
Ms. Ashby, please answer the question, and then you've used your rebuttal time.
I mean, you're not disputing that there were several firearms offenses in front of the court.
No, I'm
okay.
Certainly not disputing that. Let's see if I can find it.
Oh, you need... At think that was the question to be answered, that there were multiple firearms charges.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought there was more.
Thank you for your argument. We will greet counsel, and then we're going to take about a 10-minute recess.